Everybody, Rob Mauer here. Welcome back. Looking forward to going through Tesla's earnings call and company update today. And of course, the shareholder letter, which we should get here in about 15 minutes. If you're joining live, we'll hang out. We'll talk a little bit before that, catch up on some of the news from across this quarter, I guess. And if you are joining a little bit later, check the timestamps down below. You can fast forward to both when we get the actual shareholder letter. And then we'll take a look at the numbers in Excel as well. So those will be timestamped down below. And then later today, when Tesla does have their company update, we will do a live stream for that. I'll take notes as that call is happening, and we'll reconvene and talk after that. So the link for that is in the description as well. If you guys can really quickly just let me know on audio levels, it looks like it might be a little bit high. Let me know if that gets a little bit too high and we can adjust. My streaming isn't quite as locked in when I only do it every 3 months as opposed to every weekday. So appreciate your guys' patience. It was kind of a hectic morning and afternoon today. It's having a lot of issues with the streaming software here. So hopefully everything goes off without a hitch later today, but we'll see. All right, so Tesla today. Nice day. Much better day than yesterday. Obviously, not making up the loss from yesterday. I think we were down about 7 or 8% or something like that. But the market recovering, Tesla recovering a little bit today. As we head into earnings, ultimately probably doesn't mean too much, just with the general volatility that we are seeing in the markets. Posted earlier on X, what are you expecting today from people? And I noticed someone in here just said volatility, which I thought was a great answer. Sometimes when we expect that, though, turns out to be the opposite. So we'll see. But obviously, the stock performance today potentially not too meaningful in terms of the overall, weekly performance or whatever as we head into earnings today. So let's talk about this company update that we're supposed to expect. So Tesla did change the language a little bit in their production and delivery report that we, of course, got at the very beginning of April. We can talk about that in a second, but everyone kind of picked up on the fact that the verbiage changed here. So they'll post financial results. At the time, Tesla will have a brief advisory issuing containing a link to a Q1 2025 update. The management will hold a live company update and question and answer webcast at 4:30 that day. You can see, compared to the last quarter, Tesla had previously said Tesla management will hold a live question and answer webcast that day. So since the earnings calls are really more than a live question and answer webcast, you've got the opening remarks and things like that, I don't put too much weight in this change. The simple answer would just be that Tesla found that this new language is a little bit more accurate to what is actually happening with the earnings call. So that's sort of the Occam's razor, simplest possible outcome here. That's what I would bet on. But of course, anytime there is a language change, it kind of sparks the question of, was there a more significant reason for that? And of course, that's led to a bunch of speculation on what this company update could be, if it has to do with Elon, if it has to do with these new, more affordable vehicles that we've heard about. I think Reuters a couple of days ago just had an article saying that those could potentially be delayed. They also talked about how potentially that's just a reduced cost Model Y. I don't put a ton of weight in those reporting in those reports particularly. I think those things could definitely be true. But oftentimes I feel like when those stories get reported, it's sort of like half the information or something like that. A little bit of telephone sometimes at play as well. So that would be sort of my best guess on what's happening with that reporting. But hopefully we'll learn a little bit more today about what the status is. When we do get the earnings report, I'll try to remember to scroll down really quickly. This is Q4, obviously, but I'll try to remember to scroll down really quickly and check the outlook section, because as we do head into the earnings report here, I think we all understand, and we can take a look at the numbers here in a second. I think we all understand that Q1 is not going to be the most exciting earnings report in terms of the actual financials. Now, there was a big disrupting factor of the switchover to the Model Y refresh, the Juniper Model Y, which I think Tesla has executed actually quite well. But anytime you have your most significant revenue generating and profit generating product be going through that sort of period of downtime just from the refresh and upgrade and things like that, it's obviously going to impact your revenue for that quarter, and that's what we're seeing. I think early in the quarter there were a ton of articles about, Tesla sales being bad and tying that to politics and things like that. And I think, the overall massive majority factor was the Model Y refresh. That's not to say that some of those other things don't exist or could be, factors as well, but it's really, really tough to sort of take that away from the limited data that we got in the first quarter. So hopefully now that that ramp, I think, has gone quite well and Tesla's back to a really strong production rate in the second quarter, hopefully that'll give us a little bit better look at some of those things. And then, you know, as we see here with this outlook section, hopefully we're getting more information on these more affordable vehicles, which last quarter Tesla said, so this would have been in, you know, mid to late January, Tesla said they do remain on track for start of production in the first half of 2025. So again, the Reuters report saying maybe that's delayed a little bit. As we sit here towards the end of April, we're getting really close to the end of the first half of 2025. Something like 8 weeks left, 9 weeks left, something like that. So the time is running short. We haven't seen a whole lot of details. We did see some castings that popped up yesterday, courtesy of Joe Tegmeyer at Gigafactory Texas. And it looks like those could be for a new vehicle. It looked like, according to some of the labeling on the sides there, that maybe it stood for something like RoboTaxi Texas. So that's my guess on those castings, maybe not necessarily tied to these more affordable models. But of course, everyone kind of speculates that maybe one of the more affordable models is based on the RoboTaxi. That's not my personal opinion. I'm really left unsure on what the current circumstances is. So getting back to my original point here, one of the first things I want to look at today will be this outlook section. Okay, one other quick thing that I want to point out here. This is just queued up for hopefully refreshing into that report when it comes out. One other quick thing on the earnings report as we get it. We talked a little bit about this last quarter. The accounting rules for how Bitcoin gets recognized have changed, and that changed last quarter. So that affected Tesla's overall financials last quarter in a positive way. You can see here from their 10K that the change in the valuation of Bitcoin netted positive $523 million, and it looks like that went to the other income line, which is actually a change because it used to go to a different line, which I'll flip over to the financials here. We can take a look at how that used to be recorded. So that used to be, let's see, it used to be in the restructure slash other line. I don't think last quarter that happened unless it sort of netted out with some other significant negative charge. So I think it's switching to a different other income line. I don't do as detailed of the financial recap as I used to, so I'm not quite as well-versed as it as I once was, but that's what it looks like is happening to me. It's going into other income. Just something to be aware of, as that will, again, positively affect last quarter's number, most likely negative effect this quarter's number. Probably, if my rough estimating is, you know, somewhere in the ballpark, probably to the tune of about negative $100 million of negative impact in Q1. And that's just basically looking at the price of Bitcoin, about 92,000 to end the year. And then if you go to March 31st, it was around, let's see, 81,000. So roughly 10% decline. And Tesla's got about $1 billion recognized at fair market value as of the end of the year. So that's just, you know, my rough guess on that. Not insanely impactful, but as Bitcoin can tend to be a little bit volatile as well, in future quarters, it could even be more significant than that. So always something to keep an eye on. And as we go through more quarters here, we'll get a better understanding of how that's really impacting things as well. Okay, so let's see. I feel like I had a couple other things I wanted to talk about. Oh yeah, the delivery numbers. So again, as I was saying, I think the biggest factor in terms of the overall delivery numbers this quarter would be the downtime for production for Model Y. That being said, if you do look at some of the other factors here, or the other data that we're getting, the other models line, I don't think there's any way to spin that as anything less than disappointing. We're looking at about 13,000 deliveries, and of course that's Model S, Model X, and Cybertruck. So those, definitely not a strong first quarter. You know, hopefully we'll see that continue to improve. Tesla did introduce the rear-wheel drive Cybertruck. I can't remember exactly when that started shipping. I think it's still a little bit out. But hopefully as Tesla continues to get further along in the production process of Cybertruck, that's something that can continue to pick up volume, because I think so far the volume has definitely been disappointing, especially relative to Tesla's targeted production rate, somewhere around 125,000. It's really tough to, you know, pull out from that, though, whether that is really something that is going to be a long-term demand issue, or if that's something that really has more to do with price point, and then price point to performance as well. It seems like there's been pretty good progress on 4680s in the last 3 to 6 months. And I think those are a big factor in that price to performance calculations, particularly for the Cybertruck, of course. So that's one area that I think there is continued reason to have some optimism there, but I think obviously slower start than what many would have hoped for the Cybertruck, and I think that's affecting these other lines. SNX, it's just so tough because I think they in many ways do compete with the Model 3 and the Model Y, and from a value standpoint, it's really tough to move up into those other vehicles. So I don't think that they're going to have some sudden turnaround. I think with these other models, it's really going to be up to Cybertruck. But even with all of those things, really what's most important, as we kind of always talk about Model 3 and Model Y, that's what's going to be providing the majority of the profit that's coming into Tesla. As we, think about how this earnings report works all the way from top to bottom, most of what's driving this is 3 and Y, and really most of that is Model Y. So coming back to the sort of the financial picture for this quarter, it's going to be a lot softer. We'll flip back to Excel and we can look at analyst consensus here for a second. You can see they're expecting much lower numbers than last quarter, which makes sense given obviously the lower delivery amounts here. Energy storage, it's roughly on par with last quarter. The best way to look at energy storage, I think, is sort of a rolling 6-month average. So if you look at that, then still seeing significant progress there. And of course, as Megafactory Shanghai ramps up, we should continue to see growth in throughout the rest of 2025. And then they talked last quarter about the third Megafactory coming online in the United States relatively soon. So I think still a lot of reason to be optimistic about that. Some good reasons to be optimistic about deliveries rebounding from where they're at, certainly here in Q1 as a low, as we head into Q2. So as far as the numbers go here, we're going to see a softer quarter, but hopefully a little bit of an outlier, at least as it comes to the rest of the year. So anyway, analysts expecting about $20 billion in total revenue, about $3.2 billion in gross profit, which would be a 16% gross margin. That would actually be slightly down only from last quarter. Seems like to me maybe a little bit optimistic. Again, I haven't done as detailed of a forecast, but just given the overall delivery drop here, I mean, that's pretty significant. So hopefully margins improved a little bit just on sort of the ASP versus cost metric. But when you have such a large volume reduction, that's going to hurt your average cost per vehicle just because you're amortizing your cost over fewer vehicles. So again, it seems maybe a little bit optimistic, but ultimately coming out to about 38 cents. Seems like most of the Tesla retail analysts are somewhere in that ballpark too, maybe a little bit lower. Again, I don't know if everyone's kind of factoring in like Bitcoin. Who knows with regulatory credits as the gross profit number shrinks, obviously regulatory credits becomes a larger portion of that total, meaning it's more influential to how the bottom line ends up, or any of these, other lines along the way. So a lot of unknowns. I don't think anyone should have super high confidence in their forecast for this quarter. But, again, as we talked about, I think what's more important and what more people are going to be looking at is really what's going on with that outlook section, what Tesla says about these more affordable vehicles, and even more important than that, I think, what Tesla says about full self-driving and possible robotaxi launch in June, which they seem to have consistently been reiterating throughout the quarter. So as of now, I don't expect any change to that on this earnings call. I think they'll just continue to reiterate that, which I think is good news, and should help, at least support any sort of reaction, whether it's diminishing a more negative reaction or helping lift a more positive reaction after earnings. That's sort of my expectation there. But really, I think we're just kind of, moving through this period of time. Everyone's looking forward to getting to that next sort of leg of Tesla's business, and I think we're really close to that. As we get closer, it's still going to feel like it takes a while. And even if they, it sounds like everything's on track for June, but June could be a very small start. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be still painfully slow ramping up from there. But I'm excited about it. I think anyone that's driven FSD version 13, I think, can tell that the progress has been massively significant over the course of the last year. We have not seen a major FSD update now for a few months, which my guess is they're just putting all of their attention into the unsupervised version that they expect to be running in Austin. So hopefully that's where the effort's going, and hopefully that effort is yielding, continued significant progress like we had been seeing, which I think there's a lot of reason to believe that was one of the biggest takeaways from the last call, is that there's sort of all these different verticals or however you want to frame them within the progress within autonomy, that Tesla still sees a path to rapidly progressing on all of them, which Ashok talked a little bit about last time. So, all right, we're right at market close now. I'm going to flip back over to the browser here, and we'll just start seeing what's going on with the stock. Usually our first hint at the letter actually coming out is a sharp move after hours. I mean, I'll be refreshing here too, but sometimes that happens. If you guys happen to see the report, tell me. Sometimes it comes from chat too. I did see a couple of super chats in here, so thank you for those. John, nice to see you on here. I'm doing great. No complaints. I mean, I'll complain a little bit about Tesla. I think we were, what, at 470 at one point not too long ago, so it would be nice to be back there, but that's all right. I'm used to the volatility 12 years in now, so share count still the same. doesn't change the share count. Pitt, good to see you. Thank you. Miss everybody too. Lyle, thank you. Victor, thank you. All right, let's just keep checking what's going on. Up a little bit after hours. I don't think we've got the report yet. That's just Q4, so I'll just go back to the screen. You can see that there. I'll close out of that. We don't need the 10K. We don't need Bitcoin. Here's these say questions, so later today we should get these. And again, reminder, I'll be streaming the earnings call as well. So there's a link to that in the description. Hopefully everyone will join for that. Let's see. Just kind of reading through some chats while we wait here. If anyone's got anything they're wondering about, looking for my opinion on, let me know. Thanks, Ben. Good to see you on here. All right, sorry for the dead air here while we wait. Just don't necessarily want to go into anything. Just start chatting and then end up missing their report. But I guess we can take a quick look at these say questions. So I think usually Tesla gets through at least five of these. I think sometimes a little bit more of them. Looks like there's a couple of questions here at the top about FSD, particularly what's critical for the Robotaxi launch, what's going on with FSD unsupervised on a personal use, more affordable models. We talked a little bit about that, sort of trying to get after, is this just cheaper trims or are these actually different models, which I think is really the biggest question everyone has about them, since we haven't actually seen any sort of different models yet, which if those were coming soon, you would kind of have expected to see by now. Does Tesla see Robotaxi as a winner-take-most market? As you approach Austin launch, how do you expect to compare with Waymo's offering, especially regarding pricing, geofencing, regulatory flexibility? I mean, I could share my thoughts on that, but some questions on the unboxed method, how that's progressing. So what Tesla talked about at Investor Day a ways back. Tariffs, battery supply, also tariffs. Some questions about brand damage. I saw Elon posting some stuff today that was from like 3 years ago where he talked about Tesla just having negative article after negative article with sales just continuing to go up. Of course, that hasn't been the case recently with Model 3 and Model Y more plateauing. When you have those limited number of vehicles at a certain point, regardless of how good your brand is or whatever, anything like that, they're going to plateau. Whether that plateau should be where it is or whether it should be higher, it's open for debate for sure. But it's not like they were going to be selling 10 million Model 3s and Model Ys. All right, so we're still just waiting. Looks like you guys are saying it's out up to 246, so I do believe you. Let's see. Maybe my guest hyperlink didn't work here. All right, bear with me. We're going to get it open here. One second, let me clear my cache. Nothing there. I'm trying, guys. I'm not seeing it yet. There we go. All right. I'm going to skip this normal summary sheet. Let's just real quick check what the stock's doing and see if that's holding back to neutral-ish. We can take a quick look at earnings. So 27 cents, that's below expectations. Total revenue, also a little bit below expectations. GAAP gross margin looks like a little bit above expectations, but we'll have to see what's been driving that. And then I do just want to, again, quickly look at this outlook section. So I think this is probably the most important section. But we'll obviously go back, we'll look at what Tesla's summary of the earnings is and everything like that. All right, so volume, it's difficult to measure the impacts of shifting global trade policy on the automotive and energy supply chains, our cost structure and demand for durable goods and related services. While we are making prudent investments that will set up both our vehicle and energy businesses for growth, the rate of growth this year will depend on a variety of factors, including the rate of acceleration of our autonomy efforts, production ramp at our factories, and the broader macroeconomic environment. We will revisit our 2025 guidance in our Q2 update. All right, so just want to quickly take a look at how that kind of compares. I think Tesla had previously said they expect energy storage to grow at least 50% year over year. The rest looks like is pretty consistent. They did say we expect the vehicle business to return to growth in 2025, which it looks like they have now removed. So anytime you have a removal of something like that, that's going to be a big red flag for sort of institutional investors, which it sort of signals that Tesla is no longer confident in that. Otherwise, you would leave that and you would say, hey, we're going to update it, but we still think that we're going to hit this. So that's going to be a red flag and a pretty important one that I would imagine market's probably not loving once it gets a little bit well understood. But again, we've got more outlook here, so let's take a look. We have sufficient liquidity to fund our product roadmap, long-term capacity expansion plans, and other expenses. Furthermore, we will manage the business such that we maintain a strong balance sheet during this uncertain period. While we continue to execute on innovations to reduce cost of manufacturing and operations over time, hardware-related profits accompanied by the acceleration of AI, software, and fleet-based profits. So I don't think anything new in either of those two lines. And then here we go. Product plans for new vehicles, including more affordable models, remain on track for start of production in the first half of 2025. All right, so that's a big statement there. These vehicles will utilize aspects of our next generation platform, as well as aspects of our current platforms, and will be produced on the same manufacturing lines as our current vehicle lineup. This approach will result in achieving less cost reduction than previously expected, but enables us to prudently grow our vehicle volumes in a more CapEx efficient manner during uncertain times. This should help us fully utilize our current expected maximum capacity of close to 3 million vehicles, enabling more than 60% growth over 2024 production before investing in new manufacturing lines. Our purpose-built robotaxi product, CyberCab, will continue to pursue a revolutionary unbox manufacturing strategy and is scheduled for volume production starting in 2026. So I just want to compare. I think this is pretty much, may even be exactly verbatim. They added a dash and line up for some reason, but... or actually removed it, I guess. But otherwise, this looks like the exact same text to me. So let's make sure we're on the right report. It's Q1. Okay. So I think that's a good sign. On track for start of production the first half of this year. So like we said, we're quickly approaching the end of the first half of 2025, which means we're just a mere matter of weeks away from these new vehicles. Now, maybe the bad news part of that, if you can interpret it that way, is that since we haven't seen anything with sort of an actual new model, maybe this does suggest that some of the cheaper trims are going to fill this more affordable model role in terms of this guidance. It's really still not my expectation, but the closer that we get to, you know, this start of production date without having seen something different, it makes it more difficult to believe that. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more insight on the earnings call today. But very interesting that this is remaining on track, and I think a good sign. One thing that I do want to kind of note, they do talk about, you know, fully utilizing expected maximum capacity of close to 3 million vehicles, enabling more than 60% growth over 2024 production. I think a lot of people would read that, and it's possible that I read it this way in the past, but I think a lot of people read it as though someone is saying that they're going to do that in 2025, even if it's not like 60% production growth for the year. Maybe you could interpret it as Tesla saying that at some point in the year, the production rate will be at that 60% higher level, which isn't necessarily the case. It could take an even longer period of time heading into 2026 before Tesla is able to actually fully utilize that capacity. They're just saying that this lets them eventually get to that capacity without investing in new manufacturing lines. So it doesn't necessarily specify 2025 in there, which is just an important point to note, which I think would make more sense in combination with their volume comments up here, which sounded like a little bit less certain of vehicle growth this year, which again is hopefully won't be the case. I still hope that we will see growth this year, but obviously starting off in a bit of a hole here from Q1, which they'll have to make up in the rest of the year, which would have to depend on some of these new models most likely. So we'll see, but interesting again to see that removed out of there. Looks like still holding pretty even here after hours. So let's pop back up to the beginning and go through here as we normally do, but I think I like it better going through the outlook a little bit earlier. Okay, so we can see some of the profitability metrics there, $400 million in operating income and net income, about $900 million non-GAAP net income, operating cash flow $2.2 billion, free cash flow $700 million, $400 million increase in cash and cash investments to about $37 billion. We're going to move past this really quickly, but I think this is kind of the most important thing right now, right? When we've said this many, many earnings in a row, Tesla's business right now is providing capital for them to be able to invest as aggressively as they want to in what they think is the next leg of the business, which is obviously autonomy, obviously energy, and all of the other things that Tesla has talked about. And right now, Model 3 and Model Y are providing the ramp to be able to do that. And I think that's what's most important, not whether they sell 400,000 or 300,000 Model Ys in a quarter. It would be nice to have higher numbers, of course. No one would complain about that. And the opposite is not as fun to deal with and not as confidence-inspiring. But ultimately, if this provides Tesla with the ramp to be able to get to that next stage, these other things potentially don't matter 10 years down the road nearly as much. If you think about like Model S, Model X, we hardly even talk about them these days because they're so insignificant in the grand scheme of Tesla's business. And the hope is that someday the Model 3 and the Model Y are equally as insignificant, hopefully not because they've dropped so significantly in sales, but because the rest of Tesla's business has grown so significantly that they're just not as important anymore. And this section of the earnings report and of Tesla's financials and of their business, this is what lets them do that, lets them get to that next stage, which we're all, hopefully very excited for. All right, operations, new Model Y ramp outpacing all past ramps. As we talked about before the call, it seems like that's gone very, very well, which is very exciting. Megafactory Shanghai produced its first 100 megapacks or greater than 100 megapacks, so nice to see that. Model 3, as usual, as we're used to here with Shanghai, very quick ramp, of course, for the Megafactory. Model 3, Model Y, and Cybertruck now drive autonomously from production line to outbound lots in Fremont and Giga Texas, which is awesome to see. Tesla's posted a couple of videos of that. I'm sure everyone has seen those. All right, so summary here. In Q1, we accomplished an industry first, simultaneously changing over production lines across all factories for the world's best-selling vehicle, the Model Y. The Tesla team successfully ramped our production lines across four factories while managing supply chains across three continents without any major disruptions, demonstrating the advancement of our operational and supply chain management capabilities. AI is a major pillar of growth for Tesla and the broader economy and key to our pursuit of sustainable abundance. Furthermore, AI infrastructure is driving rapid load growth, which, along with traditional utility customer applications, is creating an outsized opportunity for our energy storage products to stabilize the grid, shift energy when it is needed most, and provide additional power capacity. While the current tariff landscape will have a relatively larger impact on our energy business compared to automotive, we are taking actions to stabilize the business in the medium to long term and focus on maintaining its health. So interesting point there. I'm sure they'll talk a little bit more about tariffs one way or another on the call, whether it's a question or just something that they want to address up front. Uncertainty in the automotive and energy markets continues to increase as rapidly evolving trade policy adversely impacts the global supply chain and cost structure of Tesla and our peers. This dynamic, along with changing political sentiment, could have a meaningful impact on demand for our products in the near term, we remain committed to expanding our business model to include delivering autonomous robots across multiple form factors and use cases powered by our real-world AI expertise to our customers and for use in our factories as we navigate these headwinds. In the face of near-term profitability hurdles, the low-cost, localized manufacturing base that we have built provides advantages in delivering the best products at the right price to our customers globally. We continue to make critical, high-value investments while maintaining a strong balance sheet during this uncertain period. So interesting to see them acknowledge the, you know, changing political sentiment and the impact that that could have on demand. I think that's probably the first acknowledgement that we've seen of that from Tesla. I don't think any surprise to anyone that historically Tesla customers have been more left-leaning, and obviously we've seen Elon shift dramatically more right, of course. So that's going to be potentially off-putting to, you know, a potential significant portion of Tesla's historical customer base. Obviously, the hope would be that that opens up a market for Tesla that maybe didn't previously exist. And hopefully, over time, people will, you know, make decisions that, I don't know. Everyone's allowed to make the decision that they want to make, obviously. But hopefully, over time, just the significance of this powerful, the powerfulness of this sentiment hopefully fades over time as we get further removed from the election and potentially further removed from Elon's particular work in Doge, which could, you know, obviously heighten some of that sentiment. So we'll see. It'll be interesting with that being acknowledged if Tesla talks any more about that on the call. I'm kind of surprised to see them acknowledge that in the first place, even though it is something that seems pretty apparent, but we'll see what they say. And then uncertainty regarding tariffs, of course. Anything tariff-related, it kind of throws the supply chain into... anyone that's worked in supply chain knows and understands that well, that it really throws things in, you know, for a loop and makes things difficult, especially with when there is volatility around what the exact tariff plans are and things like that. So hopefully some of that volatility will straighten out and more certainty will be provided in those areas so the businesses can, you know, plan around those things as necessary. All right, so we talked a little bit about some of the high-level numbers here. Right off the bat here, I can see that energy generation storage revenue quite a bit lower than what analyst expectations were. If we just real quick flip back to Excel, we'll go through and we'll put numbers into everything, but just so people can kind of see some of the context here. Energy sales people or analysts had at about 3.1, 3.2 billion. Services and others at about 2.7. So we'll flip back to the report. So we can see energy revenue quite a bit below, maybe 400 million below analyst expectations. Automotive, maybe half a billion, a couple hundred million. So not as significant of a difference on automotive line. I think between the two, analysts would like the shortfall in revenue to probably come more from energy. I think analysts probably have less confidence in how to forecast the ASP on that line. So it's probably not as a concerning of a factor when that miss happens there to analysts. And then services and other, that came in a little bit light too, maybe 100 million from analyst expectations, which again, it's just the expectations. I mean, stocks are priced based on expectations. So people sometimes get mad about how that's communicated, whether it's a miss or not, but is what it is. Total revenue, so again, maybe 800 million shy of analyst expectations there. Total gross profit, 3.153. That's actually pretty close. Analysts had expected 3.184. So with the lower revenue, not a bad performance there. And that leads to a gross margin of 16.3 versus 15.9 was analyst expectations. We'll see what's driving that, but nice to see that gross margin line kind of hold pretty strong given the lower volume and given the lower revenue that we're seeing as well. That suggests initially that pretty good cost control happened, better than what analysts would have expected, which if you've got really good cost control as the rest of the business kind of comes around, as Model Y production ramps up further, for example, that can leave you with more profit at the end of the day rather than gross margin, you know, coming in at a lower level, obviously. So good to see that. That said, operating expenses looked like they're probably a little bit higher than analyst expectations. Looks like actually quite a bit. 2.3 billion roughly expected. This is about almost 2.8. So we'll try to see if we can dig into anything driving that. But interesting to see that be quite a bit higher. Operating margin then just 2.1%. So income from operations, just again, that $400 million that we had talked about before. Analysts had expected about $860. So quite shy there, driven obviously by the lower revenues overall and the higher operating expenses, primarily the higher operating expenses. EBITDA, about $2.8 billion, 14.6 EBITDA margin. Net income for, on a GAAP basis, $400 million like we talked about, $900 non-GAAP. And then you can see EPS there. Again, analyst expectation was 38 cents EPS non-GAAP. So we're, you know, 11 cents short of analyst expectations there, which again, really coming from the higher operating expenses and in combination with the lower revenue, offset a bit by higher gross margin than expected. If I had to pick how that all worked out, this is probably what I would pick, because I think Tesla historically has had really good control over OpEx. Some of that could be from, I think, from R&D. My memory's a little hazy, but I think R&D could is one of the things that will drive this up. And if that's what's causing a miss on operating margin, then, you know, I'm all for that, because Tesla's historically spent, they've had really good control on the OpEx line and had really good ROI on their R&D. So I don't know. We'll find out a little bit later as we go through this, but just kind of the first thought that's coming to mind there. CapEx looks like Tesla dialed back, though, about $1.5 billion. Tesla, of course, gives guidance for CapEx for the year. I think they'd said maybe like eight-ish for the year. So if Q1 was maybe a little bit higher to that pace, or sorry, Q4. Well, I guess we're in Q1 now, so doesn't mean too much. But something to look at, especially when we get the 10Q, Tesla will, again, either reiterate their CapEx guidance or update us on that. May even be something that they talk about on the call. So with the lower CapEx, free cash flow, a little bit better than maybe expected with such a low production quarter, low delivery quarter. So actually pretty pleased with that. And then, as they said, about $37 billion cash and cash equivalents, which is a very strong position for what Tesla needs to do from here on out. All right, so revenue decreased 9% year over year, obviously impacted by Model Y. Reduced vehicle average selling price, we'll calc that later, due to mix and sales incentives. Negative FX impact of about $300 million, foreign exchange impact of about $300 million, offset a bit by growth in energy and services and other, and higher regulatory credit revenue, so we'll have to take a close look at that. Excuse me, profitability, operating income decreased 66% year over year. We just talked about that, but primarily impacted by reduced vehicle ASP, decline in vehicle deliveries, increased operating expenses driven by AI and other R&D projects, partially offset by a decrease in SG&A. So again, we'll take a look at how those buckets come out, but that's like exactly what I'd want to see, right? The operating expense increases in AI and R&D, if we're going to have them somewhere, that's exactly where we want to have them. And a decrease in SG&A at the same time, like that's probably where you would not necessarily want to see them as much. If there was an increase, and it's pretty normal for that to increase sequentially for Tesla as the business grows. So to even see that decline on a year-over-year basis, we'll see what it looks like quarter-over-quarter. But this, to me, that's a nice piece of context for the numbers. All right, growth in energy generation and storage, gross profit helping to boost profitability, lower costs associated with Cybertruck production ramp in the first quarter of last year, lower cost per vehicle, including lower raw material costs, offset partially by lower fixed cost absorption, primarily from Model Y production decrease year over year, and then higher regulatory credit revenue also contributing. Again, that's on a year-over-year basis, so we'll take a look at that. Cash, quarter-end cash, cash equivalents, $37 billion. Yep, so we talked about all that. Okay, so here we go. None of these numbers should be new to us. We can see the vehicle inventory. This was something you could calculate before, but just for context there, 22 days. This, I want to make note that Tesla coming into Q1 was at, I believe this was a two-year low. If you want to go back and look at previous earnings reports, this was about a two-year low in terms of days of inventory heading into the quarter. So that's just helpful context when it comes to sales. Generally, when you have a higher inventory number, that means vehicles are probably where you want them to be. It makes them a lot easier to sell, makes them a lot easier to deliver throughout the quarter. And it just helps increase that delivery number, especially versus the production. Sorry, the delivery number, especially versus production. So some people might say, oh man, they produced 30,000 or 28,000 more vehicles or whatever than they sold. But that really is meaningless if you're not looking at the beginning of the period inventory. You really need to factor that in as well, which, again, it was quite low. So just helpful context to look at and remember when you're kind of looking at those in combination. So looks like locations, Tesla locations increasing. Mobile service fleet continues to decline a bit. Seems like maybe Tesla, I don't know, decided that they grew that too aggressively and now are ramping it back. I love mobile service. So it's, I think, without knowing exactly why, maybe a little bit disappointing, but Tesla's could just be optimizing it, right? It could be growing in some areas, pulling back in other areas where it doesn't make as much sense. So tough to know without sort of more details on that business line for Tesla. But supercharger connectors continue to grow at a very rapid pace, despite all of the controversy around the supercharging team and the layoffs that happened there. I don't know if we're a year out on that yet, but it's definitely been a while. So, okay, automotive. As we get into some of Tesla's commentary, first let's just take a look at the current installed vehicle capacity, and we can brush that up against last quarter's table just to see if there's any changes there. So we got 100,000, 550, 950, 375. Yeah, so that's all the same. It looks like our statuses have changed here, though, for some of those bottom rows. So Cybercab has gone from in development to construction. Semi has gone from pilot production to construction. I think Tesla maybe just sort of re-establishing how they want to name these statuses, because I don't know if in development or pilot production is really too different. But kind of interesting. Roadster, though, going to design development, which is, I guess, just a little bit more specific detail than what it previously said, which was just in development. I think they don't want to be misleading about it being production development, still design development. So I don't know if that's technically a step back. I think it's just more precision on how they're talking about the Roadster in this table. All right, so make sure we're on the right one here. Okay, so as guided, switchover production lines for the new Model Y resulted in several weeks of lost production. During the switchover, we also prepared our factories for the launch of new models later this year. All right, that's good. Given economic uncertainty resulting from changing trade policy, more affordable options are as critical as ever. All right, so I think strong start to this page. Good to see Tesla, you know, continuing to recognize that. For the U.S., in April, Gigafactory Texas produced its 400,000th vehicle, which they had posted on X, and the team launched the long-range Cybertruck with 362 miles of range, starting under 63K after incentives. Giga Nevada achieved record battery pack production. Model 3 and Model Y deliveries in the U.S. are now made with 100% U.S.-built battery packs, which seems like good timing for that to be the case, so that's good. We continued progress on the installation of lines for Tesla Semi in Nevada and Cybercab in Texas. Both remain on track for volume production next year, so obviously critical important there, mostly the Cybertruck, but I'm also extremely excited about the Semi as well. Not enough people talk about or think about or analyze Semi plus FSD. I don't know why. Seems like a very obvious area that is going to be extremely important. Anyway, for Asia Pacific, we achieved record orders for a single day in the region when we launched the new Model Y. This is significant given the region is the most competitive EV market and is also a validation of our cost structure and competitive positioning. While conventional wisdom is that competition will be bad for Tesla, we have long believed that it accelerates broader EV adoption and is positive for our sales long term. The Shanghai Model Y factory fully ramped production in 6 weeks, our quickest ramp of any vehicle ever. We launched FSD supervised in China, the first market outside of North America, with positive reception. And Europe and the Middle East, Giga Berlin built its 500,000th Model Y and recently began deliveries of Model 3 and Model Y to plan to begin deliveries of Cybertruck later this year in Saudi Arabia, the first Cybertruck market outside of North America. We continue to prepare for the launch of FSD supervised in Europe this year, pending regulatory approval. I really hope Europe will approve that. So overdue. It's ridiculous. Okay. Trailing 12-month market share, so you can see just kind of a continuation of the trends that we had seen. Dropping in Europe, China, looks like sort of plateauing. U.S. and Canada, yeah, dropping, plateauing. Of course, this is, you know, in a period where Model Y was not available for sale entirely in all of these markets and being refreshed and low production and things like that. So hopefully we'll see that, you know, tick up a little bit next quarter. All right, technology, AI and AI software and hardware. Let's take a quick look at these charts. So unsupervised vehicles driving around. Pretty cool. We'll see how this chart compares. It's going to look pretty similar, I think. Yeah, continued accumulation, obviously, of version 12 and beyond, so V13 miles, but let's just see if we can quick math how many miles we added last quarter. So call that 2.8, 2.9. Now Tesla, maybe 3.6, so maybe 700 million miles of FSD added in the last 90 days in the first quarter. So obviously, very nice to see that continued progress on miles driven there and more data collected. And Tesla can feed that to, I think it's Cortex. It's either Cortex or Colossus. I think Colossus is XAI, but Cortex there in Texas, which now the name makes more sense. We'll keep it straight that way. All right. So we believe that our approach to autonomy, a vision-only architecture with end-to-end neural networks trained on billions of examples of real-world data, will result in scalable and safe deployment across diverse geographies and use cases. This was validated with the launch of FSD supervised in China, which was achieved without access to country-specific training data. Model 3, Model Y, and Cybertruck now drive autonomously without human supervision from the production line to the outbound logistics lot at our U.S. factories. We remain on track for pilot launch of Robotaxi in Austin by June and builds of Optimus on our Fremont pilot line production line in 2025 with wider deployment of bots doing useful work across our factories. All right, so there we go. Not surprised, but again, reiteration of Austin, Robotaxi, June, which I think is, if there's one single thing that's important right now, that's the thing. So great to have that reiterated here in the shareholder letter. Vehicle and other software. A major benefit of our software-defined products is continual improvement of functionality through over-the-air updates. Recent updates to eligible vehicles include adaptive headlights to prevent glare for other road occupants by selectively dimming individual pixels of the headlight, and rear cross traffic chime that emits a warning sound from the direction of a crossing vehicle or pedestrian while reversing. In China, we launched our own interactive onboarding tutorial app to improve the customer delivery experience. Then battery powertrain and manufacturing, we launched an IRA-compliant 4680 cell, making the Cybertruck eligible for the $7,500 consumer tax credit. Building on our efforts to reduce supply risk, we have developed our 4680 supply to ensure each component is sourced from at least two countries of origin. Our lithium refining and cathode production plants are on track to start production in 2025, onshoring production of critical battery materials to the U.S. So again, I think positive updates pretty consistently for 4680 over the last few months. Energy and services and other. Energy storage deployments continued to grow on a trailing 12-month basis. While we expect sequential deployments to remain volatile, we anticipate that expanding capacity for both Powerwall and Megapack will drive continued growth in TTM deployment volumes. Although increasing tariffs may cause market volatility and near-term impact to supply and demand, we see electrification of the economy and growth of AI increasing the need for energy storage as a source of baseload and grid stability. So I don't think anything too new there that we hadn't talked about already. We achieved a fourth sequential record for Powerwall deployments, crossing 1 gigawatt hour for the first time. That's a nice data point. And continued to be supply constrained. Gross margin for the energy business improved sequentially. Megafactory Shanghai volumes did not contribute to quarterly deployments. However, the factory produced over 100 megapacks, with the megapacks en route to a customer. With a highly localized supply chain, 20 gigawatt hours of current annual capacity, and the ability to double to 40 gigawatt hours, Megafactory Shanghai will be an important asset for meeting global energy storage demand during a time of uncertain cost structure in the U.S. All right, so we know the output for Lathrop, about 40 gigawatt hours. Here they're saying 20 to start, which was the same with Lathrop, and then ramp up to 40. So obviously that's 10 gigawatt hours per quarter for each of those. Right now, Shanghai not contributing. Our total energy deployments were 10.4 gigawatt hours this quarter. So, you know, it looks like 1 gigawatt hour of that, or maybe about 10%, were Powerwall, and then you've got about 9 gigawatt hours of Megapacks. You can see how that annualizes to about 36 gigawatt hours there for the Megapack, and we're primed to grow that by 50% from the first stage of Shanghai, and then hopefully 100% from the second stage of Shanghai, and then hopefully continued growth from the third Megafactory as well. But nice to see that on Powerwall, maybe 10% of the energy storage deployed, but probably a higher percentage of revenue. Who knows how the profitability works for those business lines, but potentially, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was, you know, 15, 20% of maybe revenue, maybe profit. Something in that ballpark wouldn't surprise me, though. Services and other. Gross profit grew 25% year over year thanks to improvement in non-warranty maintenance service and collision gross profit. We opened over 1,800 new supercharging stalls, growing the network 17% year over year, delivered 1.4 terawatt hours of electricity to Tesla and non-Tesla customers across 42 million charging sessions year over year, growth of 26 and 27% respectively. So nice to see that. Services and other used to be a big drain on Tesla's profitability. I think profit margin-wise, it still pulls things down, but at least it's a positive contributor, which is definitely nice than the opposite. So that's good to see. And this is something that, if you haven't followed Tesla that long, this was actually a big headwind for them for a long time, is that all their vehicles were under warranty, right? So they're not making anything, and in fact, they're only losing money on service. But now we've got older vehicles in the fleet, and Tesla's able to at least make a little bit or not lose as much money on those vehicles through service, which is something that they're calling out here as helping improve the profitability, which, again, for any new automaker, that's going to be a big headwind, is trying to like get through that period where you don't have any sort of revenue or profit, and it's just a drain on the overall business. When you're already trying to like scale and do things, it's one of the things that makes starting an automotive company one of the not impossible things to do, but extremely difficult things to do in terms of business choice. Outlook, we had already gone through. Model Y delivery event. Model Y delivery event. There's one in China, Berlin. Those people looking great, very happy. Tesla Diner coming soon. I think people have probably been following that on X. There's some videos of that. Semi-factory. Cybertruck crash test. We finally got that video. And then Powerwall ramp, 1,500 in a shift. So another nice data point there. And then the first megapack off the line, Shanghai. Ooh, there we go. That's an exciting one. Fremont pilot production line for Optimus. Yes, you can see, definitely a pilot line. It's going to be, you know, relatively low volume, of course, as Tesla dials in those processes and the design of Optimus and all those sort of things. You don't want some super full-scale line while that is all happening. All right, then we're into the financials. So let's see. I did see a couple of super chats. We'll just take a super quick look at those. Sorry for the redundancy in my commentary. We'll take a quick look at those, and then we'll hop into financials. Let's see. Robert, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see. Question about Cybertruck. So I'll save that till the end, and we can do a couple of questions. Bernard, thank you. Mario, thank you as well. I'll come back to that Cybertruck question. If I don't, then remind me after earnings, but I'll do my best to remember that. Let's hop into the financials now, and we can just see how everything's kind of flowing through from top to bottom. For all those other Excel nerds out there, best part of the show. All right, so let's see. Starting at the top here, automotive sales. Again, just bear with me, and then we'll talk about, you know, some of the takeaways here. But automotive total revenues. Just paste that in there. Classic. I know that's wrong. That was just a typo. All right. So regulatory credits we have not talked about. Let's see what those were. Tesla did say they were up year over year. And always one of the big question marks of how earnings are going to come in and how good or not good they are without those stripped away. $5.95 here, though. So actually one of the lower quarters for Tesla. Obviously, I would like to see this be a higher number because this is real money that Tesla gets and can use for whatever they want to use. It's great. It's a great source of income, great source of profit for them. Actually, probably more than their entire operating margin this quarter, which, again, a little bit scary when you put it into that perspective. But $595 million, it's quite a bit lower than certainly we have seen it in past quarters. Still up year over year. Maybe we're getting into a cycle where Q1 is a little bit lower for Tesla and then the rest of the quarters are a little bit higher. Always kind of tough to tell with regulatory credits, but 595. We'll talk more about how that looks for margins here in a second. But for energy sales, we're at 2730. So you can see that's, again, that line that was quite a bit lower than analyst expectations. And then services and other is 2638. Make sure that's all adding up all right, which it is. And you can, again, compare to analysts there. This is the consensus versus the actual. So analysts were 1% too high on that, 16% too high there, etc. ASPs, we'll calculate that in a second. We need a little bit more figures there. Let's calc profit here, though. So total cost of automotive revenues was $11,700. So we'll just take that out of our revenue, yielding our profit there. For energy generation and storage, we're at $1,945. Okay, and then for services and other, we're at $2,537. And something seems off. Yes. Another typo. All right, so, yep, those all check out. So 3153. So again, even though revenue was about 700 million short, gross profit only about 30 million short, which actually is pretty good because I think it's not necessarily coming from regulatory credits, since those are probably around what would have been projected, or, you know, something in the ballpark. At least not enough to, if this was a billion and then that was what's driving this much closer than what we would have maybe guessed off the revenue line, then yeah, a little bit disappointing. But to see it come not really from a ton of strength in the regulatory credit line, that's a much healthier sign for the actual underlying business, which means better quarters ahead, all circumstances being equal. So nice to see that. If we look at the gross margin percents here, automotive gross margin 16.2%. Again, it's nice to see that. Even though we did drop a little bit quarter over quarter, it's not a significant, majorly significant drop, just 40 basis points there quarter over quarter, even though you've got about 130,000 fewer vehicles being delivered, which means you're amortizing your costs over way, way fewer vehicles. It's like reverse economies of scale. So that hurts you. For it to only hurt a little bit relative to Q4 is a good sign. And then if you take away credits, you can see only about 110 basis points difference there. Which is, we probably should have talked about first in that context. But again, it's not as significant of a drop as probably what analysts were expecting given the context of deliveries for this quarter overall. And then hopefully offset a little bit by energy gross margin here, about almost 29%. Nice to see that bounce back up a little bit, where we're still kind of like figuring out exactly how this is going to shake out, since we've sort of eked this line of business up into the 20%+ gross margin category really just in the last year. So still some uncertainty on that. Anytime that that's a strong number, nice to see, which I think this is a strong number there on energy, and maybe especially so given that costs or ASP or whatever probably came in a little bit lower than what analysts would have guessed based off of obviously the known energy storage deployment number. Powerwall strength maybe contributing to that. You know, tough for us to know, but could be a factor. Services and other gross margin. So looks like that increased very slightly, 30 basis points year over year, but slightly down quarter over quarter. Not a major impact, obviously, to the overall number. So again, total gross margin higher than expected on lower than expected revenue, which, you know, if you're going to have a miss on one, I think that's probably the better way to go. Tough to say, but nice to see that even with the lower revenue that gross margins held up above expectations. All right, so the R&D, we talked about this. It'll be interesting to see how this came in, because that's really going to, you know, be one of the driving factors behind this lower operating income. So R&D there was 1409. So by a pretty large amount, an all-time high for Tesla. You can see even last quarter was pretty high, but we had been running around a billion, maybe a little over a billion. So this is maybe, I don't know, 300 million higher than average over the last. It looks like average is 1135. So not quite $300 million higher than the average over the last 12 months prior to this quarter. But that's a pretty significant bump when generally we tend to see that increase pretty slowly over time. And then the SG&A number here, 1251. So you can see down year over year, 9%. And then even down quarter over quarter, which suggests pretty good cost control on the SG&A line. And again, if you could tell me that this was going to be 2.6, 2.7 billion combined, probably the more that split in R&D, the better in terms of just, you know, how this shakes out in future quarters. SG&A is like a stickier cost. It's probably harder to get that cost down, whereas R&D is much more discretionary, meaning Tesla's really optionally choosing to make these investments and put that spend into R&D because they feel like they're going to get a good return on it, which, you know, I would be very much in favor of them doing that when they think it's appropriate. So I think that's good. I think it's good to see that shake out the way that it did. And then it looks like we're getting $94 million here on the restructuring and other line as a positive influence, which is helping that margin up a little bit from 2.5. So that's a cost. So we're on the expenses. So we're getting a $94 million cost on the restructuring line. I don't think that would be from Bitcoin. It's suspiciously close to kind of what we had, that math that we had worked out a little bit earlier. But I still feel like that's coming in somewhere else. I'm gonna have to go back to my detailed model to figure out how that's all flowing through. But at any rate, once we get the 10Q, we'll get a little bit more insight on how that Bitcoin number is coming through. Maybe that's capturing there. Regardless, these are generally one-time things, so if you were to take that out, that would improve your operating margin by 40 basis points, up to about 2.5% from the 2.1 that it did come in at. And then for EBITDA, we talked about that. Let's just get that number in there. That's 28.14. No surprise, quite a drop quarter over quarter, not quite as bad year over year, but still down 17% year over year. Non-GAAP net income, that was 934. Let's see, stock-based compensation. I can't remember if we talked about this last quarter, but Tesla did change their stock-based compensation. Maybe they didn't change it, but it's changed in terms of how it influences the overall report now from the past. Because of that deferred tax benefit that they had for a long time, and then they recognized a few quarters ago, probably a little bit over a year ago now. After that was recognized, then that changed how stock-based compensation is hitting that line. So let me just find the correct number. So net of tax was 428. Okay. So GAAP net income. Oh, okay. I'm going to flip back here to the report because we actually do get some. Tesla added a line for us nicely. Get out of that. So this is what I'm putting in for stock-based compensation net of tax. Then Tesla is now also, this is a new line on the earnings report, I think, this time. Yeah, looks like they put a little footnote in there pointing that out as well. So $97 million, again, very close to what we had talked about before the call as a loss. Yeah, a gain would be giving us a negative number there, but as a loss, $97 million from Bitcoin this quarter, and it looks like that is a gap included in GAAP, but something that Tesla is factoring out for the non-GAAP number, which makes a lot of sense. So when we think about that, and we think about like earnings per share forecasts, usually that forecast is for non-GAAP numbers, so people should be backing out that Bitcoin impact, which is, I think, the appropriate way to do it, since it's just an asset that they own that's going to fluctuate every quarter. So it makes sense. It would not be included then in the 27 cents non-GAAP. It would be included in the 12 cents gap that we got. So at any rate, I'll have to adjust my sheet here a little bit to calculate correctly, but for now I'll just hard key in 409 for our gap number. I guess we could just put that there. We'll just change this to Bitcoin. I'll fix that later. Probably do the correct order though. Whatever, I'll fix that later, guys. But just so we know, that wasn't the 97 million there. And then this, as I said, was 27 cents, and this was 12 cents. So usually you would see that be closer together. Certainly if you went back a ways, it was only about a 10 cents difference. Now when you have a bigger impact from that Bitcoin, the difference is gonna grow, plus just how the stock-based compensation comes in for that quarter as well. So free cash flow, that was a holdover from when I set up the sheet, so that's not correct. That was somewhere in the 700 million range, if I recall. 664. All right, one more thing to calc is ASP, and then we can just quickly run through these numbers one more time. And then again, the earnings call will start in about 40 minutes. We'll hop over to the new broadcast for that, but I'll be taking notes and hopefully everyone can join for that as well. Then I'll get to that Cybertruck question too. I won't forget. All right, auto revenue from leasing. Bear with me one second here. So 447 again, interestingly. Auto cost of goods for leasing, 239. And deliveries. $13,721. All right, so there we go. ASP and cost. Look at that in context here. So average selling price increased by a couple hundred bucks quarter over quarter. Costs increased $700-ish quarter over quarter, but costs declining year over year. I generally like to look at this more quarter over quarter. ASP down 8%, cost down 3%. So nice to see the increase. I think obviously as you have Juniper being the deliveries, obviously Tesla prioritized the launch version of the vehicle. I would imagine that's probably almost entirely responsible for the increase. Even the other business lines, Model 3, etc., I would guess you probably would have seen a decline quarter over quarter maybe. Tough to know exactly how all that shakes out. It's really difficult. And you have regional shifts and all that sort of stuff too. For example, you could just have a higher portion of sales happening in China because Shanghai ramped faster, and that's going to be a negative ASP contributor generally. So it's really tough to forecast those things, but in general, increasing here a couple hundred bucks, seeing automotive costs increase a little bit is not too bad, because again, yes, we are seeing a lower automotive gross margin ex credits here, which happened because the COGS increased more than the ASP increased. That's going to drive your margin down. But what we're not seeing is like a ridiculous out of control increase here from the combination of really two big factors this quarter, which would be number one, the downtime, meaning less vehicles to spread your costs over, which we've talked about. And then number two, you are just launching a new vehicle. And as you ramp up production, your production process is going to be way less efficient. And Tesla is selling the higher trim versions of the vehicles. Those vehicles have higher costs. So the combination of those two factors, no surprise to see cost of goods sold increase on average, but the fact that they were able to increase only a little bit and barely even be above what it was in Q3, I think that's a really positive sign. And I think that's, you know, one of the bigger positive surprises from this quarter is just how these are kind of coming in. So I think that's a good thing. I think it's good that this regulatory credit revenue, again, I would love to just have that be a couple billion dollars, you know, whatever. It's money and Tesla can put it to work and that's great. But it means that the other numbers were stronger when the results are less reliant on that regulatory credit number. So for that to not be any crazy high number, I think is a great sign and more repeatable in the future. It looks like ASP probably lower, only slightly lower than what analysts would have expected based on that automotive number. Again, most of the revenue miss was coming from energy, which I think, again, people probably have low confidence in exactly what that's going to be. It's just hard to know, you know, contract to contract, delivery to delivery, timing of payment to timing to payment. There's just a lot of uncertainty and unknowns that we just can't know right now for that line of business. So as long as that energy gross margin is coming in healthy, I think a revenue miss on energy line is not something that many people are going to care too much about. And then services and other, obviously not super significant. And then from the operation perspective, we talked about that. You know, you could have easily had this be, I don't know, a couple hundred million lower, 300 million, maybe even 400 million lower if Tesla had really wanted to sort of like control that line. And then, you know, if you didn't have this sort of, I don't know if this was Bitcoin or if it's something else, we'll see what that is. But there is a very easy way for Tesla to have reported, you know, something like this for operating income if they had wanted to. Obviously, it's not some crazy awesome number, but if in future quarters, if they wanted to cut those things, there's a pretty easy $500 million there. That's sort of discretionary or non-repeating, et cetera. That can pretty easily come back in that operating margin line and get us back to sort of that 5-6% that most of the previous quarters had been at. Obviously, we want to get higher than that over time. That's going to come through hopefully autonomy and software and all the other stuff that Tesla's working on. So it's healthy enough, and I don't see any need for Tesla to have wanted to do that. And again, that's why I'm not really disappointed by a miss on this line or anything like that, especially knowing that it's coming primarily from the R&D line. And then this stuff, yeah, I think that's really just all flow through from all the other items that we talked about. So don't think anything specific on that. I guess we can do the PE calculation. So yeah, that's not going to look great. But over the last 4 quarters, looks like about $1.82 in GAAP earnings per share, which is what the PE is going to be calculated off of, which is unfortunate when this quarter, obviously the Bitcoin thing does impact GAAP. But $1.82, I don't know. I haven't looked at the stock, but we were at like 235. So looks like the PE on that would be 129x. I think coming into the day, we were around 100. I guess I could probably calculate that too. But basically, we're losing 22 cents earnings per share there. So going from 204 previously to 182. All right, so let's see. Let's flip back to the browser. I'll get to that question here. Again, coming up in a little over half an hour, we'll do the earnings call. That'll be on this channel as well. Link to that's in the description. Not quite wrapping up here yet. Just trying to get myself back to where I want to be. And let's look at the stock. It's been a bit. It's been a minute. So, all right, nothing happened. So, exactly what I said, right? When you expect that volatility, sometimes it has a way of not appearing, which seems to be what's happening today. About 2:38, we're up 59 cents after hours. So, I mean, I'll take it. Obviously, there was a miss on the bottom line, a pretty significant miss versus analyst expectations. But I think the reiteration of the June timeline for Robotaxi, the reiteration of more affordable models in the second half of the year, those are the two biggest pieces of news from this report, in my opinion. So I think great to have that reaffirmed. And now we'll head into this earnings call, company update, whatever it ends up being. Which we'll see a little bit later today. So, let me get back to the super chat. If anyone else has any questions, let me know. But Mario would ask, what do you think will happen with the Cybertruck in the long run? I think production quantities are shaping up to be more like Model X and S. I thought it f always felt that it wasn't going to be a success. Yeah, so like I said earlier, I think it's tough to say that it hasn't been a disappointing start to the Cybertruck. I think, certainly the price to performance, particularly relating to range, did not match up with what Tesla had unveiled in 2019. Tough to know what the fault of that is, if it's Tesla's decision to make the truck a little bit smaller, which would yield a little bit less room for batteries, if it's slower progress on 4680 than what they happened at that time, if it's, supply chain, macroeconomics, inflation, like all of these things that happened. It's been a while, right? So things have changed significantly, but falling short of those targets obviously made converting on the reservations much more difficult. The open question is how close can Tesla work over time to get to those targets? I think the Cybertruck's a really incredible vehicle. I think a lot of people that are owners of them are blown away that they have the opportunity to own a vehicle that has the sort of technology that the Cybertruck has in it. But it's just a very expensive car right now. It's a very expensive vehicle. We'll see how this rear wheel drive version does. Tesla had to decontent a lot out of it to be able to hit that price point. Hopefully, it's something that they're still making a good margin on. So, as you know, that comes out and potentially opens up more volume, that can be a very positive sort of cycle on the overall production process, as we kind of just talked about with Model Y here for this quarter. On the negative end of that, if this newer vehicle, newer lower cost Cybertruck does allow Tesla to increase the volume, then that can bring costs down further, which then can be a very virtuous cycle where you can continue to ramp volume more and lower price more, and potentially leads to a very good outcome. But that's not something I would necessarily count on right now. And it probably sounds a little bit silly to say it, and it probably sounds like it's like a little bit of a I don't know, like just like a Tesla bull response of like everything's good, everything's computer. But ultimately, and I think I probably would have said this if you'd asked me 2 or 3 years ago too, like Cybertruck's not the reason I'm invested in Tesla, right? I think it's a cool product. I think Tesla's learned a lot through the process. I think it's been a test bed for a lot of technology that's gonna have a role in Tesla's every single vehicle that Tesla produces from here on out. So even if it's not hitting 125 or 250,000 vehicles a year, then I don't think that means that it was a complete wash and a complete failure and there's nothing to learn from it or nothing, no benefit to Tesla or anything like that. I think there's already been benefits to Tesla from the Cybertruck. So whether it's going to hit those things, I don't know. It depends how Tesla can do on that cost performance curve. And I'm sure they're laser focused on that as they've always been in their entire history. And we'll see how the progress happens. But ultimately, what's more important is what happens with FSD, just as it's been for a long time. That's, you know, if you think about where the auto market's going to be in 10 years, in 20 years, that's, you know, what happens here with autonomy in the next couple of years is going to shape that more than anything else. And that's what's most important. So hopefully that makes sense. I'm not giving up on the Cybertruck yet. I think there's things to be optimistic about with it, but obviously been a slower start than what many of us would have hoped for sure. All right, Bernard, thank you. Appreciate that. Julian, thank you. I think it's time for some moderators. Yeah, if anyone wants to moderate the channel or the chat, let me know. That would be nice. I'm just looking at the super chats right now, but Pankaj, thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Yeah, sorry if the normal chat's a little out of control. I don't have time to do that and do what I'm doing. Just looking through some of these. Yeah, looks like pretty typical. People have strong opinions. Topic for another day, I suppose. But we'll wrap it up now. I'll make sure that I can get prepped here. Those of you maybe heard me at the beginning had some issues, not with this streaming software, but the one I use for earnings, giving me some trouble today. So knock on wood that'll go smoothly, but we'll see everybody over there. Again, the link is down in the description, and that should start in about 28 minutes or so. I'll start the broadcast right when Tesla goes live. So thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. It's been fun to be back, and we'll see you in a bit for the earnings call/company update. Thank you.